Hi, everyone. Welcome to whatever conversation this is, a Zoom conversation about how we're all surviving and thriving and doing what we're doing during COVID. I am Hilde Gottlieb with Creating the Future. And Erica, you want to introduce yourself?
Yes, I'm Eric Bader. I'm the Vice President of Content and Learning for ACCP. And I'm glad to be having this conversation with you and my colleague, Carolyn.
And I'm Carolyn Berkowitz. I'm the CEO of ACCP and also really glad to be here.
Me too. Can you guys say what ACCP is?
Absolutely. So ACCP is a membership association for purpose-driven professionals who work inside companies. Generally, they are responsible for the relationship with communities, the contributions, the volunteerism, and sometimes they're responsible for other things like diversity and inclusion or sustainability. It looks a little bit different in every company, but I think what is the same among all companies is that they are bridging the relationships with community and relationships inside the business and brokering those relationships so that both the business and the community improve. And during times like this, that role is on display and more important than ever.
It's one of the reasons I'm so excited to be with you all. And the fact that ACCP stands for the Association for Corporate Citizenship Professionals, so it's about the people.
That's right. That's right.
Pretty awesome.
It's pretty about awesome. The people.
The people doing that work. For those who are not familiar with Creating the Future, we are our mission is systems change around the world in any systems that people find themselves so that the systems that we operate in are actually bringing out the best in each other. So many of the systems that we encounter day to day suspect the worst in us. And what would it take to change the questions that we're asking and change the questions, especially that those systems are intended to address so that the questions are bringing out the best in us and the systems bring out the best in us. So the relationship, the delightful simpatico between our two missions and organizations and just the ability to work with you two, which is just my fun.
Absolutely. And the systems right now are exposing all that is complicated with them. And so we are seeing the result of things happening within systems that we might not have noticed before. And right now they are coming out loud and clear, and it says to me that we need to think again about many of these systems, how they came to be, why they came to be, and what we need to do to get more from them.
Yeah, I don't know if you all remember, there was a poem that made the rounds a couple decades ago called The Cow Path. And it was about how a road, like a superhighway, wound up where it was in this community. And it started centuries ago because a cow meandered through the woods, and then people, well, there's a path, so it went, and nobody could figure out why this highway made no sense whatsoever in the 2000s, but right. it all started because that's how a cow meandered through the woods, and we trod that path and then said, well, that's a road, and I think half of our...
That must be the road we need.
I think half of our systems look like that because they did. You know, it made sense, whatever, but yeah. So how are you all doing? How are you, you know, what are you noticing? What is going on in your lives that just in terms of all of this, how are you coping? Are things busy? What are you noticing?
Erica?
We've been busy. I think at ACCP, as Carolyn alluded to, the work has gotten more important and more pressing. Mm-hmm. And so we've certainly seen the importance for ACCP's ability to bring people to get together, to connect, to drive conversations, to put people in virtual rooms, to talk about what they're doing. And I think, you know, now more than ever, people need the opportunity to understand what others are doing and how they're doing it. I think one of the silver linings that's come from it is there's been a real willingness to share and for people mm-hmm. to really talk about what they're doing, because the need is just so great. There really isn't time to feel proprietary or, you know, to kind of skirt the real details. I think people are just really open right now because the need requires us to be. And so that's been a nice thing, chatting with our members and others in the field, that people are really willing to kind of pull back the curtain and say, here's what we're doing and here's how we're doing it and here's who we're working with. And because those conversations are fast tracking others' ability to get things done. And so I think that's a nice silver lining in this really challenging situation.
No kidding.
Yeah, I think we're, you know, as an organization, we are very much needed. I think, you know, we all worry about what the world looks like, and so we continue to worry. But in the meantime, we're really busy with what is now. I think as individuals, you know, different people feel differently on different days. We have sort of a saying that if we can get 100% out of the senior leadership team, then we're doing pretty well. I may be at 50% and some others may be at 25 each, or, you know, or somebody may be at 80 and the rest of us are at 5 each. Exactly. But if we could get one 100% on a day, that's pretty good.
No kidding. You know, it has been interesting because creating the future, I mean, our name is creating the future. Our whole focus is to create a future that is different than our past. And, you know, very much like you all, that's needed now more than ever.
Right.
And there's this push and pull going on with, okay, our mission is actually even more important than it was.
Yep.
And it was really important. And there's days where I'm not up to that.
Right.
Or you know, what time is it? I may have been up to it an hour ago.
Right. But we passed the window.
Yeah. Yeah. It's pretty remarkable. It's so much of a lot of what I've been talking about recently is the fact that everything that we're experiencing is so normal. And it's actually how we're built. I pulled a couple slides. I'm going to do Brain Science 101 because it's fascinating to me. This is actually what we're built for. So you know what? I'm gonna do it without the slide for a minute, and then I'll show it to you, because in a very like rudimentary brain science, like the kind that you could teach to an 8-year-old, there's two parts of the brain. There's sort of the survival when we're threatened ganglion back in here at the very, very base of the neck. And then, you know, we're all familiar with the term the frontal lobe, and that's where all the thinking happens. And whenever we feel threatened, we know that this part right here, we just need to feel threatened. It could be like a pile of work on our desk, doesn't matter what it is. The adrenaline just shoots through our brain and you can feel your heart racing. And one of the other chemicals that goes through the brain, so we can see here is the frontal lobe up here, but down by the neck is adrenaline and a chemical that we don't talk about a lot that's called cortisol. And cortisol's function is to slow down anything that could get in the way of getting out of there. So, I mean, initially, this wasn't about personal stress and emotional stress. Our brains are very much the same as most mammals, most animals, in that our first goal is to survive. Mm-hmm. And so if we're feeling threatened and adrenaline's saying, let's go, let's get us out of here, our heart is racing, cortisol slows down things like digestion or metabolism or our immune functions that we don't need if we're escaping. So that is a pretty cool. Our brain not only gets us going, but it stops all of the functions that we don't need in order to get going, with the exception of one interesting factor, and that is that our brains also know that we don't need to be thinking if we are threatened. So, you know, if the tiger's coming at you, you don't need to be thinking about it. You need to just be getting out of there. And it literally is throwing up, cortisol is literally throwing up this fence, preventing us from getting access to that frontal lobe. So if we're feeling like, I can't think straight, I can't, that we're actually built for that. It, that is actually, our brains are doing what they're supposed to do. Mm-hmm. We don't have to like it. What they're doing, and then, you know, you add on to it, and I know that the three of us have been having this conversation on and off for several weeks, ever since the conference that you all were going to have at the beginning of March got canceled literally while people were in the air.
Yeah.
That you know, everybody's brain went, and you could, I love the image of that fence. Every once in a while, I just say, oh, okay, the fence is up. The fence right. is, I'm not thinking clearly. Well, so now think about all the things we do in a normal day-to-day that you just do by habit. And now there's no habits. So everything I used to do, I don't. So I'll give you two examples right. that just popped up this weekend. One of them, we were out of coffee. So if you're out of coffee, you run to the store and you go get coffee, right?
So theoretically,
the first thing you're doing is, okay, do I have a mask? Am I gonna have to wait in line to get into Trader Joe's? Is the grinder going to be working, or do I need to figure out getting the coffee and then break? So suddenly, we need to just run to the store and get coffee is like a thing,
right?
And that's how it is with everything. Right. I mean, I am watching, especially women, although some men, where suddenly getting ready for a meeting is figuring out, okay, can they see the real roots of my hair?
Absolutely.
I have to think about that before I went to the salon every 3 weeks.
Absolutely.
And so our brains.
Are my clothes clashing with the wall behind me because I'm not in an office?
I mean, it's every little thing. And then multiply that with parents who are homeschooling and with all of that, and while trying to work at the same time. Our brains are so busy. They are on such overload. And so if you can't find your car keys or your glasses or your children, you know, this is really normal. It's what we're built for.
Right. And yet it feels like we could break it any second. Any second, you know.
Yeah.
Some little thing that is normally easy to cope with becomes the straw that broke the back.
Yes. Absolutely. And it's because getting the coffee is so much more complicated than it ever was before. And in some ways it feels like everything we're trying to do is so much more complicated. Mm-hmm. We are a mostly remote workforce, which I have been very thankful for because we already know how to work remotely. We didn't have to figure that out on the fly in the middle of this situation. But I think about our colleagues that we know that we're used to just walking next door to their coworker and having a quick conversation about how to get their work done. And they're trying to figure out how you do that now because they can't just pop into somebody's office or, you know, see somebody on the way in or the way out or go grab coffee with somebody to talk about the project. Like even just those simple kind of drive-by conversations, which is how mm-hmm. a lot of work gets done when you work together in an office, having to recreate that and figure out, well, how do we drive work forward when we don't have those opportunities anymore?
Yeah, one great example, we have, we purchased a book and a gift for particular board members and speakers when we had planned on having a conference in early March. And they were shipped back to the office and we can't send them because number one, nobody's in their office to receive it. And number two, somebody would have to go into our office and get them and then go into a post office or a UPS office and get that done. And it's not worth the risk of those things. And we don't know where to mail them anyway. So, you know,
everything becomes a thing. Yeah, yeah. You know, I think about your members really specifically. We're all, anybody who's doing community work, And that's your focus. So we're all holding the space as best we can for ourselves on any given moment and our families, and hoping that we're keeping ourselves and them safe. We are still having to work and sort of holding the space for our coworkers. And, you know, I'm noticing that just like we sort of checked in with each other when we started here, how many conversations are now starting, meetings are starting with, are you okay? How is everybody doing?
Right.
And I have a colleague in Australia, and I was in one of these kinds of conversations last week, and he said, you know, the difference, he says, here in Australia, you all in the U.S. say, how are you doing? We say, how are you going? He said, and what I'm noticing is that people are asking, how are you going? And they really want to know.
Mm-hmm.
And so, mm-hmm. So you know, here we are, we're trying to keep ourselves okay, trying to keep our families okay. We're holding the space for each other in our offices because we care about each other. And then we're responsible for and holding the space for community and trying to figure out how we're all fitting into the company. There's like four, five, six different layers of what we're all feeling and what we're all, and trying to keep in here all while that fence is up.
Right. Well, and in corporate social responsibility, there is all that is happening at home and in life, and, you know, books and microphones in the apartment and children homeschooling. And then there's the uncertainty in corporate America. You know, will I have a job? Will my colleagues have a job? What will my workplace look like? And then there is this really stark realization of how great the need is in community. And when you're in corporate social impact and you're either providing funding or providing human resources that can really help solve a problem, or you're supporting nonprofit organizations that you've partnered with for years and now they are different. They are up to their eyeballs and feeding people and in, you know, sort of the problems that were unsolved before that are exacerbated by this. And it, you know, you can see how people in this field are just traumatized. And then you've got the amygdala back there saying, by the way, don't think too hard about this. And so it's, you know, it's a difficult job, but so, so important.
Yeah, the people that I encounter on a daily basis are at every spectrum in social change.
Mm-hmm.
They are in the corporate world, they're in the nonprofit, the traditional nonprofit community benefit world, they're in the government world, they're social mm-hmm. entrepreneurs. And things that we take for granted, again, that Starbucks is going to be open and I'm going to be able to have a meeting, or that I'm going to have Wi-Fi. Or that
right.
So again, it is at every level. Am I able,
yes.
My community needs more work, and am I able to do that work? And oh, by the way, I'm not functioning well today because my brain is busy trying to focus on, yeah. So.
And there's so much need, and you just scratch the surface of some of the things going on. You know, I think about the issue of abuse in homes where there isn't the sort of safety net to social services because there aren't either teachers watching or, you know, and there's frustration and lost jobs at home. And so anger could be right on the edge. And there's just so much to help that is so deep. And we know that throwing money at a problem is not the answer, although it sure does help. And so I think there is and will be for the foreseeable future so much to do as we think about who we are as a country, as a world, as global citizens. You know, how do we address these things that are you know, on display for all to see? Not the fault of anyone, of a bad actor, but just nor have they been corrected or changed in ways that seem to resolve the issues?
Well, I'm thinking about two sort of different, not really different, related aspects. Mm-hmm. That I think first, it's really important that, you know, they say, you know, put your oxygen mask on you first, and mm-hmm. then I really, and it's very hard to do. People who are drawn to social change work and community work, we tend to be the ones who think of everybody else first and ourselves last.
Right.
And that's becoming very evident as this goes from 1 week to 2 weeks to 1 month to 2 months to, you know, are things going to open up? Are they not going to open up? So many of people saying, you can open everything you want. I'm not going until a surgeon general or somebody tells me it's, I mean, mm-hmm. those kinds of, you know, again, big things,
right. But
that taking care of ourselves thing. I've been talking to a lot of people about some of the small things that we can do to just take care of ourselves in a way that isn't, you know, we've been joking about Mother's Day before we got on the call, saying that sometimes Mother's Day is great if I could just spend some time alone. There are those moments when we do have, either it's when you first get up in the morning or going to bed at night. Some of the questions that I find powerful is to list the things we do have control over. Mm-hmm. Because there's so much we don't have control over. Mm-hmm. And it's not just make a mental list. I find that just like use a yellow pad and actually seeing it is helpful to say, oh, okay, that's what I have control over. Because what that leads to is then you can work on the things you do have control over. Mm-hmm. And sort of start thinking about, oh, okay, I don't have control over that. There's nothing that worrying is going to do about it.
Right.
And so in terms of that, it's a small self-care thing that we can do, mm-hmm. that I find sometimes when I do that, I can feel my shoulders relax.
I can
feel my breathing come back. Just, oh, okay. And it can be little things. You know, I have control over what I choose to eat for dinner. I have control over, you know, what time I get up in the morning. I have control over if I'm going to go for a walk today. Not the big, you know, and if you want the big things, great. But sometimes just having those, what do I have control over, like in the next 10 minutes?
Yeah.
And just breathing that in.
I do think that extrapolating that to the work that people in community are doing, that can be very helpful when they think about these really big, really tough, hard challenges and how they want to show up and try to, you know, make change. Just thinking about what do they have control over? What part of that do they have control over? And instead of being, you know, disheartened by how large the challenges are, and they don't have all the money and they don't have the ability to change policy and those kinds of things, but there are things that they would have control over. And so how do they tackle those? How do they keep those in mind and think about what they can do that would be most impactful in those areas? I think that can be really helpful too, to not get, you know, kind of, like I said, disheartened by the fact that they can't change the whole system or the whole structure and solve the whole problem. But there are things that we can do, and thinking about identifying those could be very helpful.
Well, and I also think about being a leader and what you are holding as a leader. And so when I think about the organization and the people that work here every day, how can I help them? How can I see them? How can I understand that not, you know, I explain to them that I don't have control over certain things, and then have them see and feel like they can control a set of things, and really allowing that to happen. And I've read that in some ways that's when innovation is able to take hold, because all you can do is try something right now and it's better than what exists. And the failure is not seen as a failure nearly to the extent that it's seen as a really good, admirable try that we learn from. So as I think about being a leader, I'm telling myself that it's really about having people understand the power that they do have, and embrace that. That helps people turn, you know, what is it? Excuse me, it's my dog, and there's a trash truck outside.
What happens?
Exactly, but it helps them to see that in moments like these, they really could make a big difference by trying something that under normal circumstances they might not think of.
Well, and you know, you're talking about being a leader in holding the space. Now you're holding the space for a yet another group of right. people that you're and
colleagues and employees.
There's that that mindfulness when you're in those meetings to be able to say, that's not something we have control over. Let's go back to what we do have control over.
I mean, yeah.
Yeah. But you know, and then there's the other part of it where we are being encouraged. Have you all seen that New Yorker cartoon that's been making the rounds with the guy in the boat? Let me see if I have it. Let me see. Yeah, there we go. The guy in the rowboat.
Oh yes.
That's leaking, and the sharks and the ships are out, and the yes. lightning is striking. And this is it, the time to finish your novel. You know, we keep thinking, this is it, the time for us to be in community and be the. And
right.
You know, at some point we're adding another lightning bolt. We're just like.
Right. We should be able to do more. We should, yes. since we're not commuting, have more time to do this magnificent thing, or we should. So there's so many shoulds, yeah, that.
Yeah. Yeah. Have you heard the expression that the, I think Tara Brach says that should is an argument with reality.
Yes. Yeah, I've never heard that, but I love Tara
Brach. I
love that, you know, and we do, we should all over ourselves, so to speak. But yeah. Yeah. And, you know, another thing that we can do personally, is to be conscious of when we're having a good day and when we're having a bad day. Mm-hmm. And to either be able to cancel a meeting or reschedule a meeting, or to say, or to start the meeting with, I'm not at my best today. Mm-hmm. And again, that whole ability to be human with each other. I love that your dog is barking, Carolyn. I mean, we're getting to know each other as people
right.
in these meetings, yes. now. Right. You know, kids are
well. I have to say, Hildy, one of the things that you said in one of our conversations, I have thought about every morning when I look at my calendar. You shared that you look at your agenda for the day and you take into account what's already on your calendar, and you think realistically about what you can get done that day. And it has changed my thinking in the last few weeks, because the days that I look at my calendar and I'm in meetings all day, the only thing I expect of myself is to take some really good notes in those meetings so that tomorrow I can figure out what I need to do.
Right.
But I don't look at myself at the end of the day and say, well, gosh, I didn't get to that project, or I didn't move this thing forward. Like, I've just been so much more realistic looking at my calendar and saying, today, all I can do is show up for these meetings. And I really can't expect myself to do more because I don't have any time to do more.
Right.
And it's really been so helpful. And then on the days when I do have a nice big gap of time with no meetings, I feel like, okay, this is the opportunity to move some of those things forward and get work done on projects. But it's really changed my expectations of myself, which has really helped in terms of some of that struggle with all the shoulds of it, right? Before, I would have looked at it and thought, well, here's my to-do list and I should be checking things off, not realizing that, yes, but if you put the to-do list next to the daily calendar, there's no time to do any of those things.
Yeah, and I also feel, you might only have the brain to do one of them right now. I'm at the point where I've got one thing a day on the to-do list, and if I get done something else, I'm like, yay, and if I get that one thing done, I'm like, yay, and...
I also feel like people are more realistic about their about calendars.
Yeah.
So it is easier now for me to say no. It's easier for me now to be patient when somebody else says, you know, this week is bad. It's finals week for my kids. Mm-hmm. And so I think while it may have always worked out that that was the natural order in which things got done, there was always this, you know, disappointing, I'm going to try to give it 150%. There isn't 150% to give.
No.
And now when people aren't expecting it, it feels more realistic.
Yeah.
And it's one of the things that I hope we can remember and take with us, just like I hope we can remember that sometimes it's okay to meet on Zoom, and sometimes it's okay not to have makeup on. And, you know, all of those.
Pants, I highly recommend pants all the
absolutely.
Time.
Absolutely.
Fully dressed, but.
Yeah. And it's okay if a small person walks by, nobody thinks less of you.
Yeah.
I think it really has, and Hilda, you mentioned it hearing Carolyn's dog bark, but I think it has humanized us in ways that we couldn't have expected. Seeing people's homes and seeing their space and seeing their dogs and their family members and their kids, and like understanding that that's just what's happening, I think really has allowed people to give themselves more grace and give each other more
yes.
grace. And that's what you're talking about, Carolyn, that I think I hope as well that we carry that forward and that we don't go back to this, you know, division between work and life. I've never loved the work-life balance thing because it's like, well, your life is your life and it's a whole thing.
Right.
You don't carve part out of your life for work, but I hope that we can take that forward and really be more graceful with ourselves and with others as we think about what we can get done and how we do it. And I also hope, and I will say, I've been a little bit frustrated as I've been looking, you know, the job market is crazy right now. Some places are hiring, some places are furloughing or laying off. There's definitely a concern for people about their work, employment, and their future. And there's all this talk about flexibility and working from home. And yet many of the jobs that I see posted are still place-based. And
right.
I mean, I got really excited about a position that might have been great for some of our members. And I went to look, and it was like, there was a whole article from the organization about the good things that they were doing and how they were managing working remotely. And it was like, we got a great new position and you got to be in our office to do it. And so I hope that we can take a step back and, you know, think about, it doesn't always have to be that way. Like, was there even a conversation about whether that person really needs to be located in the office in the city with everybody? Should they consider that there might be others around the country that could do that work and do it well? I hope that when we come out of it, we don't have people boomerang right back into everybody back in their office so we can see people working.
Right.
And that we are a little more flexible about how we work together and where people are. I say that knowing that I work in a mostly virtual organization, so I have a bias for that because we work that way anyway. But I hope that some of those changes do come with us and that we're able to really maximize. I mean, I think about it's maximizing talent, right? The ability to have people do great work, and how do we find ways for people to do that regardless of where they're located or what schedule they can work, you know, those kinds of things.
One of the things, Hilde, that you, I know that your organization promotes in terms of asking the right questions and envisioning the future is getting to know the person. And there have been so many just really great examples, Erica, as you said. There was a gentleman at a meeting, you know, all corporate meetings, 30 or so companies on the Zoom, and you know, each company would present. And on the chat, somebody said, is that a rabbit? Does he have a bunny rabbit? Is that a rabbit in the cage in his living room? And in another, there was this gorgeous painting behind somebody's head who worked at a corporation. And I, in the follow-up from the meeting, I said, by the way, I love your taste in art. And he sent me a link to this magnificent Chicago artist and said, you know, I always dreamed of owning art that this guy does, and now I do, and, you know, here's a site, and I learned all about this beautiful artist who I never would have heard of. So there's such different kinds of relationships that, you know, I knew both of these people before, but there's something different about that now.
Yeah, you watch Creating the Futures meetings, and you've been in our meetings. Mm-hmm. We start every meeting with both touching base. How are you? How are you feeling? What's going on in your life and your heart? Very quick. It doesn't have to be, a dissertation. And the second thing we'll always ask is, what's exciting? What's mm-hmm. awesome that's going on in your life? And you're immediately bringing the whole person into the room. Mm-hmm. We end our meetings with reflection. What stood out to you? What are you noticing? What are you bringing out of the meeting? And just giving ourselves that ability to connect as humans. We have this ridiculous notion I loosely call it the business world, but it is how work, I guess the work world is more appropriate, that we just need to get down to business, get down to work. As if that it is ever efficient. And then we tell people that they should, quote, leave their baggage at the door.
Right.
Well, that you're basically saying leave the human part of you outside and just bring the work part of you in. And that's the human part. I remember when my mom was dying. That was with me every single day for the 18 months I was taking care of her.
Absolutely.
And some days I was okay, and some days I wasn't okay. And if I didn't say that in the meeting, then we go to the assumptions. Well, she's this, or she's that, or she's this. No, she's just not really present because something big is going on in her life.
Right. The stories we write, as Brené Brown says.
Yes.
Yeah. So, it's let me bring up a slide here, because we're really focusing on this. Anyone who's been around Creating the Future at all, we know that these last two, these right two boxes make perfect sense. Our actions create our results. What we don't think about so often is that our beliefs and our assumptions and all of the things that go into our thinking is what creates our actions. Mm-hmm. And right now, when our thinking is sometimes being curtailed, sometimes not being curtailed, the most important place that we can focus is on our thinking. That's where our power is. And so as we're thinking about it for ourselves, when we're thinking about it for what are we bringing into the room with other people, as we're thinking about how we're listening to the folks that are in community with us, changing that thinking part, being more mindful, being more slow, being more conscious of, I'm not doing great today, and either I'll reschedule the meeting or I'll tell them up front. I'm just to let you know, this hasn't been a great day around here. You two know that last week we were in the middle of replumbing our house, which is great fun to do during COVID. I will tell you, I do not recommend it. It was not our choice. It was an emergency. But if I hadn't opened a meeting by saying there's going to be noise outside and, our house is in a total disarray. If I hadn't started by saying, everything that was in the bathrooms are now in the living room, you don't know that this is all that's going on in my head right now.
Right.
That you may be asking about a file, and my only thought might be, now where did I put the files?
Tell me, what is the difference? And I appreciated that. What is the difference between that and an excuse? So, I've often, when I decline a meeting, I want to say, here's why I'm declining, because I want people to feel like you are important to me, but I still have to cancel. So for me, I always want to give a reason. And sometimes I get the pushback that you don't need to give a reason to anybody. And so, does that then mean that it's an excuse? And I'm just curious how you get around that thinking.
It's an excuse are seven layers of judgment that we're putting on stuff. Mm-hmm. Right now that's just what we need, more judgment. It's if we're not judging ourselves enough.
Right.
If somebody wants to take what I'm saying as an excuse, My daughter's got a friend who categorizes problems as a my P and a why P. It's a my problem or a your problem. And if you're going to take what I'm saying as something, you know, oh, she's just making excuses, that's not my problem. My problem is I want you to feel honored that this meeting was important to me. You know, I could do 2 hours on catalytic thinking and how this fits into catalytic thinking, but really what this is all about is the situation that's presenting itself is you're not at your best to be in a meeting. I'm going to make it up. You're not at your best to be in a meeting. We can either react to that and go into reactive mode, which is I should be, there's always shoulds. I should be there, or I should tell them, or we can pivot to what does this situation make possible? And what the situation makes possible is, well, I won't, and for whom? What does it make possible for me? Okay, I get to rest. I get to, again, honor the fact that I can work on good days and not work on bad days. Okay, what does this situation make possible for the person I'm supposed to meet with? Well, I want them to feel honored. Okay, I can say that.
Right.
I can say right. in my email or in my whatever, you know, I really want to honor our time together. I'm not at my best today, or the plumber is here, or whatever. Mm-hmm. And I want to make sure that our time together is as focused as it could be. It's mm-hmm. a very different thing than, you know, I just don't feel like.
But do you think this a crisis like this helps people to do that? Do you think people feel more comfortable, or is that why we're having this conversation, so people can see that it's okay to do that?
Bingo. Bingo. I mean, how many, you know, we've got the judgments that we think others are putting on us. There's the judgments they do put on us. And then we multiply that by a million and we get the judgments we put on ourselves.
Right.
I should be stronger. I should be better. I should be more capable. I'm at the height of my career. If I can't handle this, that's all the self-talk.
Right.
That's all the self-talk. And, you know, if we talked to our friends the way we talk to ourselves, we wouldn't mm-hmm. have any friends.
Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm. So, yeah.
And then through all this, there are those amazing moments of clarity. I think about Erica, who in the middle of a crisis of canceling a conference said, clear as a bell, I have plans for a virtual conference. I'm already working on it in my mind. And that was before we were all on, you know, before Zoom was a thing that we were all on 24/7. And so, you know, there are in times like this, these moments of clarity.
And grab those. That's why I said, you know, work on the good days and rest on the bad days. Give our brains the rest and the nurturing. You're basically creating conditions for your own success. Mm-hmm. And realizing that I want to bring my best self to my coworkers, to my family. Let's talk a little bit about community, because we've been talking about everything, you know, the work situation and the personal situation, because everybody that chances are is going to watch this is doing something to benefit their communities, whether that is their job, whether that's their avocation, whether that's just where their heart is. So many people right now who weren't working in community are wanting to
yes.
help. The power that we have, and again, that thinking box, the thinking that creates our actions, right now, more than ever, it's going to be really important that, because what's coming at us from community, especially your members that are being asked for money and time and help in any way possible, is... what are we hearing when people, what are we listening for and hearing when people are coming to us? Mm. And let me sort of give you, let me branch out on that a little bit. As part of catalytic thinking, we call this catalytic listening. What we have a tendency to do, and again, it's the way our brain, where we are reactive creatures, first and foremost. What we have a tendency to do when someone comes at us with problems, and the conflicts and all of the things that are wrong is we tend to go down that rabbit hole with them. Mm-hmm. We tend to, and just think about grant applications and stuff. We're asking people, what are your problems and how bad are they?
Right.
You know, we're at that, you know, how bad does it suck? And does it suck as bad as this group? Well, theirs sucks worse. So we're going to, and what that's doing to your brain, just think about it. Think about when we're focused on people's problems and they're telling us how bad it is, especially if they're in person or it's eloquently written of how horrible it is. Your brain's doing all that same stuff. It's triggering. And your reaction is going to trigger their reaction. And we're creating that cycle. We're creating that cycle. And so people tell us about their problems. They tell us about their weaknesses, about stuff they don't have, their lack. They talk about conflicts. And that's where we tend to just react directly to that. Well, if that's the problem, then here's how we can fix it. And we don't realize that when people are talking, they're also telling us, because again, we're cut off from the frontal lobe. All we're doing is listening to that reactive piece. We don't realize that they're also telling us what is working. Mm-hmm. We don't have to even ask for it. They are also telling us what is working if we listen for it. They're also telling us what good would look like on the other side of that. We really want our community to be healthy, but right now it's blah, 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 blah. And we go right into the right now instead of saying, oh, we want our community to be healthy. They're already telling us. So much of conflict that we hear is really about values of what is important. Oh, so if I've got a conflict with you, Erica, chances are it's because what's important to you is different than what's important to me. And we're not articulating that. We're articulating, you're right. And the more we can train ourselves, practice listening to others, listening to ourselves, through that lens of possibility, we can't necessarily do it all the time, but the more we can even just remind ourselves before we go into a meeting, oh, okay, listen for what's powerful. Listen for what's possible, and sort of bring that out, cull that out of the conversation. I'll give you just a very, very simple example. We've been talking a lot about there's good days and there's bad days. And what are almost everybody focused on? The bad days. Right? I was such a mess. I couldn't find this and I couldn't. My kids were yelling around. And what we're saying, and we're hearing people say, I've got good days and I've got bad days. And we're listening and going right down the rabbit hole of bad days. Mm-hmm. Instead of, so what's going on the good days? How's it feeling on the good days? Mm-hmm. And we can, if they're suggesting, we don't, you know, it's not about asking, so are you having good days too? Because that would make me go, but it is listening for the fact that people are actually already telling us that stuff. Mm-hmm. You know, they're already saying, wow, you know, it's really bedlam. I managed to finally get out and go for a walk yesterday. Really? How was the walk? Mm-hmm. The more we can listen for that. And again, the same thing in community. So we can hear it in ourselves. We can hear it in just about anybody. But as we're listening to what's going on in community, I mean, how many of us are marveling at the number of people who are volunteering, who are going out to soup kitchens, and I don't care what, I'll have gloves, I'll have masks. The ability to say, wow, there's a lot going on that's really good, that's really strong. We could build on that.
Right.
Oh, yeah, because we just get stuck in that loop.
Right.
So, yeah.
Yeah.
So Hildy, I know when we talked about this as we were leading up to this conversation, you shared kind of a technique that you use when you go into conversation where you actually make some notes on a piece of paper. Can you share that with the people listening? Because
I
think it's pretty powerful. It's a simple thing, but that kind of triggers you to listen.
I don't know if this will show when I'll see if I can draw it, and if it shows, great. And if it doesn't, we will talk it through. When I am in a conversation with folks that is going to be around stuff, not just chit-chatty, but sometimes, you know, when you're chit-chatting, it does come up too, is I make three columns on a page. One says, I don't know if this is backwards or not. One says strengths, one says outcomes, one says values. And as people are talking, I'm sticking stuff in And you know, you are human. You're gonna, you know, scribble stuff in different categories and stuff. But what it does when I'm not in listening, but I'm actually sort of reflecting back, talking mode, is I can look at my notes and I can circle. Oh, okay, yeah, there's this. I wanna make sure I focus on that. And I may have written something in the outcomes that's actually value. It doesn't matter. I'm reminding myself. Oh, focus on the strengths and the outcomes and the values. It's, again, it gets to be a habit after a while of you don't need to write it on the paper. You're sometimes listening for it. But they're really good prompts. The outcomes are, what do you really want? Not what's wrong, but what would good look like? There was an old adage or story or whatever, about a guy who goes into a hardware store to buy a nail. And he doesn't really want a nail. What he wants is something that he can make sure that he can hang a picture. And it's not really about the fact that he wants to hang a picture, but the fact that his wife has been nagging at him for the past 2 weeks to hang that picture. And it's not really about the nagging. It's the fact that he wants his wife to love him. And it manifests as he's going to the hardware store for a nail. And that always sticks in my head. That's the outcomes. And if we listen for what people really want, they're telling us right now, kids who are dependent on school lunches and are not going to school are hungry. It sounds like you really want kids to be healthy and strong right now. Yeah. Mm-hmm. It is a lot different than it sounds like that really sucks.
So how can we achieve that with our work moving forward?
Right, exactly. And you're holding the space. You're acknowledging that it does suck. This is horrible.
Right.
And it sounds like you really want kids to be healthy. Are there folks in town that are working on that? Who could you partner with? It opens up doors that are way, way more powerful and positive when we're, again, listening for what's strong. Mm-hmm. People are telling us they're just not, you know, I used to, decades ago, I was a consultant, worked with nonprofits and worked primarily with boards and governance. And somebody would call and they would say, my board is a mess. And I'd say, okay, tell me what's the mess. And they say, well, you know, we've got 12 board members, 3 of them are great, but the other 9 are making me crazy. And all they want to do is talk about the 9. All I wanted to talk about was the 3.
Right.
Tell me about those 3. What are they doing? And again, it's just, it is a focus, but especially right now when it's so easy to get overwhelmed, to get overloaded, to be thinking of the problems of the world. And again, what you do have control over is, what am I paying attention to? And again, you know, practice with yourself. What am I paying attention to in my own conversations with me? You know, what am I feeling right now? Okay, I'm feeling frustrated and overwhelmed. What would good look like? What would my outcomes be? Mm-hmm. Calm. Can I work on calm? Oh, yeah, I can.
I think about in our business and people who are engaged from the corporate perspective and community, they often have to react to a disaster or a crisis. And sometimes it's a crisis just in the community, and sometimes it's a, you know, regional crisis, and sometimes it's a national crisis, and as we know now, it's a world crisis. But I think we have learned that if you throw all your resources into relief, then there is nothing left for recovery or rebuilding what will be better the next time, more resilient communities. And so even now, as companies are still, this one's a little weird because the end of the first period here is not quite as clear, but just the relief part, many companies have sort of spent their money, they've decided what the most important thing that they can do is, and they've done that. And rather than continue to just do that, now is that time that they're really listening for the values and noticing what needs to be changed over the long haul and who they might partner with. And I think as they are thinking about the rebuilding and the resiliency, I'm hearing a lot of companies now say, I'm just stopping and seeing what other people are doing and learning what's out there and listening, taking a wait and see, because it isn't time yet to go out and fix everything for the future until we can really understand it. And just giving ourselves collectively the time to and space to thoroughly understand the problem, yep, so that the next, you know, with the next tranche, whatever that is, it can be addressed in ways that will accrue to a different future. Yeah. And well, not to what was in the past.
And I love the focus on the outcomes because, and we alluded to this earlier, so many of our systems, the way things have been done, are broken by this situation. Like, and you mentioned it, Hildy, you know, children getting food from school. That used to make sense, and now it doesn't. And so thinking about the outcome, we want children to be healthy and strong, helps us think about the other ways we could get to that outcome. It helps sort of drive that innovation instead of let's fix this, you know, pipeline of kids in school getting food. It's no, well, what there's a bigger outcome than that. And focusing on that outcome can help us think about what are the other ways that we can make that happen, right? that because that system right now is broken for all these reasons, but how do we think about still getting at that outcome? And it really kind of opens up the possibilities for people to think differently about how we reach that outcome. And it sort of takes off the blinders of the way things have always been done and helps people think differently about, well, if we want that outcome, there's so many ways we could get there. And so then let's talk about all those ways and what's possible right now, given where we are. And that's what I really love about it, is it gives us that bigger picture and allows us to think differently.
And the bigger picture also includes other people who are doing other pieces of it.
That's right.
So, you know, it opens, again, it opens that bigger view.
Right.
And it's not an either or. This is about context. It's not you listen for the problems or you listen for what's possible. You listen for, no, the reality of life has all of that stuff in it. And what we start to realize is that we're only paying attention to this part of it. We've only been paying attention to this very narrow focus of, well, this is what we do and this is how we do it. And we're seeing in corporations, we're seeing it everywhere, that people are busting open that oh, this is what we did do, but I'm not sure that works anymore. But to be able to see the whole picture, you realize the problem's part of it, but everything else is part of it too.
Right.
And that's really, that's the powerful part. That's where our power is.
Right, and that's where the breakthrough solutions are. I remember earlier in my career, the issue was kids learning and adult literacy. There were these sort of two issues. Kids can't read. Well, when their parents can't read, that's much harder. But also when their parents have had terrible experiences as children in schools and didn't feel like they were successful there, there is a very natural barrier to not feeling comfortable, feeling intimidated about going into their kids' schools. And what two different, very different fields of work came to together was that if you can bring parents into the school and teach parents in an environment where they can be successful, at the same time that you're teaching kids in an environment that they need their parents to see, well, the outcome is, you know, there is this shared commitment to literacy. And that really just changes the learning dynamic of the whole family. But otherwise, it would have been just more and more money at the problem of why aren't kids learning, or more and more money at the problem of, you know, why do these adults have low-paying jobs and can't advance? And it really is, it's a shared opportunity. And I think when we can do this kind of listening to, yeah, I hated school. I don't know how to read. It's a really terrible thing. But when you start to get at, so why don't, you know, tell me more, you start to get at, it's really, I want to help. I feel like a failure walking into a school building. And now you can come up with something that's really different.
Now you come up with it. Yeah. You know, it's so interesting. The one of the many things that this is doing, and you know, as we start, because I could talk with y'all for like another 3 hours, and as we start winding down and thinking about reflections in terms of what we're hoping will come out of this. One of the things that has become so obvious is that everything is interconnected, everything is interrelated, and we've gotten very good at specialization in myopia. You know, we're real good at looking down that tunnel and saying this is the very, very narrow thing. But you know, well, we're talking about food. Well, are we talking about poverty? Well, yeah, but if we talked about poverty, we'd have to talk about substance abuse and literacy and education and workforce. And yeah, we're just going to talk about food. We've really opened that up right now. It would be really nice if we can keep that vision, you know, that old line. So how's that working for you? We've been feeding people for how many years? How's it working to ignore all that other stuff to say, well, that's not our job? You can just keep throwing money at feeding people, or we can actually look at that whole ecosystem.
Yeah, right.
And I just had that conversation last week internally about the importance of understanding, you know, when you're funding solutions, the importance of understanding sort of where that challenge is coming from in the first place. Mm-hmm. And it's exactly what you just said, Hildy. We can continue to fund hunger, but we're just going to continue to fund hunger because there are other extenuating circumstances that are contributing to that ongoing problem. And so hopefully this will prompt all sorts of people and organizations that are focused on community to think bigger and to be willing to look upstream and figure out what's creating those challenges and how do we start to have conversations that are more inclusive of all of those things instead of that myopia of just the one issue. And hopefully this situation will have gotten people more comfortable with those conversations, more willing to have those conversations.
Yeah. And again, it's not either or. People need food. It's not, oh, let's stop feeding them and start focusing on what's possible. No, it's let's look at everything because right. We can.
Right.
Because
listening differently, getting the right people in the room, giving yourself grace that, you know, some days you are at your best and some days you aren't at your best, and other people are in that same circumstance. And what would happen if we gave everybody the benefit of the doubt about when they're their best and let them tell us.
Yeah.
And I love that you both have used the word grace in this, and I love that word. So I hate to wrap this up. I really hate to wrap this up. Anything in particular standing out to you from our conversation today, and especially as there's stuff that you hope will continue to do after this is 2 years from now and 5 years from now and 10 years from now, what are you hoping good will continue to do?
I hope that we can take some of the lessons of our gluttony, whether it is driving our cars as much as we do, or you know, caring as much about our physicality as not our health and well-being, but our physicality. Take some of those things and go easier on them and, you know, see the solutions just in how we are behaving now, but then also that we can drop the airs, drop the competition, drop the zero-sum game nature that we sometimes practice, and instead develop the set of partners that we can, as you say, think with that will help us to change the future of things that just no longer work for us.
Yeah, I really hope that we can drive conversations like this, that we can encourage people to ask different questions, that we can help people understand the power in the questions that they ask, and that regardless of where you sit in your organization, whatever that organization is, your workplace, your family, your community, there's power in the questions that you put on the table. And so I hope that we can continue that more innovative thinking, that this situation, like just by its very nature, we've had to be more innovative. I hope that we don't go rushing back to the old worn sweater just because it feels familiar. I hope that we can think about doing things differently and approaching things differently. And you mentioned it, Hildy, I hope we can carry forward the grace that we are all finding. It is not easy. I think every day we struggle with it. I think it's so much easier to give grace to others than ourselves, but this situation is calling us to do that over and over and over again. And mm-hmm. So I hope that we can find ways to continue that moving forward, and that we can be more human with each other. And that will, those two things I think go together. I think they go hand in hand, giving each other more grace and continuing to have powerful, innovative conversations and ask good questions, I think is, they feed, and it's a cycle. And so I hope that we'll be able to continue that 2 months, 2 years, and all the way down the line.
And you?
I would absolutely echo everything that you all said. The humanizing part, the grace part. There's also, I'm noticing, and we've talked a lot about this, there's a real eagerness on the part of everybody to not go back to normal. And we've all mentioned that systems that are broken, that people are articulating it.
Yes.
They're really being very clear about it wasn't working. So let's stop talking about when things go back, and let's start talking about what it looks like going forward. Our name is Creating the Future. So but people are really, we're hearing that so much. It wasn't working. Why do we want to go back to that? The thing that you were pointing out, Erica, about a job opportunity where people are saying, oh, but you got to move here. I'm hoping that what we're bringing out of this, in addition to everything that we've been talking about, is keeping that conversation alive, is questioning at every point, do we really have to do it this way? Mm-hmm. Are we doing it this way because that's the way we've always done it? Is this that cow path that is leading us to where we are? And I hope that conversation can stay alive. And you know, it's not about hope; it's about all of us just keeping that conversation alive.
Right.
Yeah. So, well, I am deeply grateful for an hour with the two of you, and looking forward to the next time. Who knows? A month from now, we may be guns blazing, going out and trying new things.
And something else.
And
I hope so.
Something new to talk about. But thank you so much for this time. It was really wonderful.
Thank you.
Yes. Thank you so much, Hildy.
Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.